Welcome to issue 24 of Behind the Panels, the only comic book podcast whose secret identity must not be known by anyone except for the people we've already told. I'm one of your secret co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other secret co-host, David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
I'm really good. Have you noticed that? How many comic book characters now that's like, my secret identity cannot be known by anyone except for you, Mary Jane, you Aunt May, Bill the Grocer, and that villain that kind of found out my identity because I published it on the internet.
Yeah. It's true. It's gotten to the point where everybody knows everybody. And then they're surprised when somebody goes, aren't you such and such? No.
No, I'm Matt Murdock, blind lawyer, except for the fact that I was outed and we're now slightly retconning that.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So now, just to explain, for those who have just joined the game.
David, tell us how this works.
This is a very special Behind the Panels, as are the five episodes in this particular holiday season. Now, you're all saying holiday? What holiday? Am I missing a holiday? No, this is the Richard holiday.
It's Festivus.
It's Richard's holiday special. Richard is going to Europe. And we decided that we didn't want to leave you guys in the lurch with absolutely nothing to listen to for 5 weeks. 5 weeks. Can I just say that one more time?
5 weeks.
Five weeks. Okay. So Richard and I are doing a marathon recording session where we are pre-recording five episodes for you. These are shorter episodes. Now, we can't do the news or we can't do any of this. We are doing that one. All right. We can't do any of that because we, of course, don't know what the news is going to be coming.
We could make it up. Okay.
Actually did that one year. Sidebar here for a second. We actually, on the Geek Actually show way back when we did Geek Actually, we did the Christmas special and we decided to pre-record it because we didn't want to actually work over Christmas. But we decided that we couldn't leave people without their geek stories and news. So we actually made up the news for the week. We said, what we think the news is going to be is. And we said, when we come back in the new year, we can apologize and retract it.
So just quickly, the real Alan Moore wakes up from a coma. After 24 years and realizes some other mad bearded guy has been ruining his legacy.
Oh, there you go. That's
good. Really, that sucked all the air out of the room this week. So that was the only major story.
And Frank Miller voted Democrat. All right, so.
And in related news.
Archie and Veronica blush.
So That's kind of a teaser for next week, really, isn't it?
It is indeed.
All right, so these are shorter shows where we're just basically doing the book club section or the pick of the week section of our show. So you'll find that these are probably about half an hour in length. They're just where we talk about some predetermined titles. Now, the reading list is on therealbits.com. You can actually find the link on the front page of realbits.com or of geekactually.com. So you'll know exactly what we are doing for the next 5 weeks, and we are adhering to that very, very religiously so that we don't go out of sequence.
Testify.
But we are recording these all out of sync. So if it sounds like we're sometimes referring to other shows, sometimes we get lost in this time-space continuum.
And you'll probably notice, let me just tell you, there's an episode coming up where I do just that.
Yes.
Wait and see if you can pick it.
So enjoy the next 5 weeks worth of episodes. This week, of course, what are we doing, Richard?
We are doing the... I guess it's not a classic so much as a modern classic of Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, Trinity.
Other way around.
Did I get that wrong?
Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Trinity.
It's the same people, just in different order. I should have just looked at the cover here, which has Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman.
Standing there on a building.
In the right order. This is written by Matt Wagner or Wagner. I'm not quite sure how he prefers to pronounce his name.
And when he wasn't writing the music for Sweet Dreams, Dave Stewart did the artwork. No, different Dave Stewart.
Dave Stewart. Now, this is an artist who was known for a lot of his work on Batman. He also did a whole lot of Green Arrow covers, which is where I knew him from. So
there's always a link there somewhere, isn't there?
Absolutely. But of course, there is one constant in all of these specials.
That's true. There's one thing we couldn't bypass or get around. It's our vintage pick of the week. I had to say it.
It's our awkwardness.
For once, I had to say it.
And try this one on to the side. I think you'll like it.
Mathematics department. This is the building.
Hi, I'm Diana Prince, the administrative assistant. Can I help you?
I'm Jan Brady. I'm doing a school project on Euclid, the famous Greek mathematician.
Well, perhaps I can help you, Jan.
Gosh, that's very nice of you, Miss Prince.
We interrupt this program to tell you that the Coast Guard reports that a small craft is floundering in heavy seas 5 miles off the coast. We repeat.
Pardon me, Jan. I just thought of something I have to do.
But, gee, she said she was going to help me. I guess I might as well go watch Marcia until Miss Prince comes back. I wonder what it was Miss Prince had to do.
This is a job for Wonder Woman. Now to get back to the university. Hi, Jan.
Oh, hi, Miss Prince. These are my brothers and sisters.
Hi, Miss Prince.
I have finished what I had to do, Jan. Now, if you want to discuss Euclid...
What's that?
Not that. He. He was a famous Greek mathematician. That's his statue.
Miss Prince, maybe you can settle an argument for us. Will you please tell my sister that brains are more important than brawn?
Well, as Diana Prince, I should say that brains are more important. But being Wonder Woman, I know the value of physical conditioning, too. What should I say?
Euclid said, "Behold, let all the arguing cease. We know the answer in ancient Greece."
Say something, Miss Prince, please.
What are we doing here? The bird must have magic powers. As Diana Prince, I better continue to act surprised about being here in ancient Greece until I have a chance to become Wonder Woman.
I think she's a little bit schizophrenic there.
As Richard Gray, I'd say that you're right, but as podcaster Richard Gray.
Now, I'm sorry. I heard something different, and I really want it to be true that she said, "Let me go wash my shirt."
I think that. I think rather than even more disturbing than that.
Oh, quality, quality stuff.
Even more disturbing than that. I think she actually said, "I'm going to go watch Marcia."
Yes, that's exactly what she said. And I'm going, watch her do what?
Well, if it was me, I'd go watch Marcia wash.
There is nothing we can say about this comic book that's going to be better than that.
That was the very first television appearance of Wonder Woman in any animated form or any form whatsoever. It was in an episode of The Brady Kids, as you probably picked up. It was a cartoon series from 1972. The episode was titled "It's All Greek to Me," where they found... themselves transported back to ancient Greece, and just as the Olympics are about to start. Now,
as you do.
Wonder Girl had actually already appeared on TV in the Superman Aquaman Hour of Adventure cartoon show.
Could these titles be any more awkward?
Which you'll hear a clip from in an upcoming episode. No, you heard that last week.
I'm lost.
Maybe not even last week. You heard it at the start of the Kick-Ass episode.
Oh, that's
that
the one. Yeah. So that was 2 weeks ago, dude.
Yeah, that was ancient years history. Ago. So yeah, look. As you said, I don't think anything's going to top that.
Oh man, that is genius. And you didn't actually warn me about this episode either. You said I've got something really, really special for this one. I said okay, not a problem. But man, when she said I'm going to go watch Marcia for half an hour, it's like. Do what? And then all that went through my mind at that point was, I'm going to go wash Marcia. it's genius.
Well, if Marcia's washing, I'd go watch her for half an hour.
Yeah, I'd go watch that for half an hour too.
As Richard Gray, I'd watch her.
As Diana Prince, I've got to, you know, it's, of course it's got to be, my mind is more powerful. But as Wonder Woman, it's got to be the breasts. It's actually, says, my physical appearance, physical attributes. It's like, what?
Diana.
And I'm sorry, was it me or did Wonder Woman sound like a school teacher?
She was working in a library at the start of that. She brought her in. She was Miss Prince and she was working in the library. And she obviously was off to help her get some books when crisis struck and she had to go off and as Wonder Woman.
But she came back pretty fast.
She came back very fast.
Yeah, that was a very, very short crisis.
Well, they had to get to ancient Greece. I can't even remember that character that was like really squeaky and going, you know, Euclid's nose then. But that was like a talking bird in the middle of the thing. It's a very
once again
thing.
From the time period that was, what was that, 70?
That was 72.
The writers were probably on acid.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the Brady Kids episode. This was also a series that spun off from other Filmation series, Mission Magic, which starred rock star Rick Springfield. This is the lineage of that clip.
Oh, God. So, the stuff you find, I swear, the stuff you find. We should probably talk about a comic book.
No, I think we should talk about this episode.
Let's talk more about Washing Marsha. All right. So.
Which Marsha, though? Is it the original Marsha or the one played by Ben Stiller's wife?
Either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. either or.
Mm.
Or both.
At the same time.
There you go.
Clean rating on the show, David.
We haven't said anything that is horrible.
No.
We're
literally into cleanliness.
We are. We want to see washing.
Lots of washing.
Lots of washing.
Sudsy.
All right, enough. Oh, the funny, kids, I'm so sorry.
The funny thing is, well, the Brady Kids. The funny thing is that you didn't actually say wash.
No, it's a watch, which is actually more disturbing, I think.
Yeah.
I just want to, all I can sit there and go, all that's going through my mind is, I can imagine her sitting there watching, like, what, Marsha brush her hair. You know, do her homework. It's like, that's stalkerish.
Yeah.
There's something very wrong with that entire clip.
And right now,
visions of sugar plums were dancing in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amongst other sugar plums is what I'm calling them.
All right.
But we have a book to talk about.
We have a book to talk about. This was actually a book that I read a while ago and I quite enjoyed. It's got a very, really retro feel to it.
You recommended this one to me, so I thought I'd... this is written, as I said, and arted, written, penciled by Matt Wagner, with Dave Stewart. And this came out. When did this come out, David?
I don't know the exact date. I thought you had these details on your hands.
Shouldn't have started that sentence without knowing
basically
the answer.
Basically, what the book is a three-part book, which is kind of retconning the first meetings between Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it came out in 2003. There you go. I've saved myself. There you go.
The formation of the Holy Trinity of the DC Universe, basically.
Mm.
What's interesting, though, is it isn't a complete meeting, because Superman and Batman seem to know each other already.
Yeah, and on first-name basis, in fact, Clark and Bruce.
Yeah, so, once again, that whole secret identity thing is, like, out the window, because they seem to already know. But Wonder Woman is new to man's world, and she's coming into this and meeting up with these people. And I think it's really, really fun that she is immediately smitten by Superman.
Mm.
And you can imagine that would be the case. And we've talked about this on the show before. We go, why haven't these two ever ended up together? Because they are so perfectly suited for each other, you know? And so we have this immediate
They went
attraction.
Out on a date once, and it just didn't work out. They were... Yeah, had nothing to talk about.
You think they could talk about their working place?
No, look, they didn't want to talk about work, and it just got awkward. Then there was that moment at the end, then they had a flyback.
They had to sit there and compare costumes. And, you know.
Like, you know, they'd already seen each other in their underwear. So there was that, you know. Hey, speaking
Except
of...
Except that he wears his underwear on the outside of his suit, which doesn't quite work.
You know? No, but you can see, you know, what religion he is from his costume. I mean... Actually, speaking of costumes, I really like that they've got him in this traditional Kryptonian garb when he's in his Fortress of Solitude.
Which looks like he's got his cape on backwards.
Or he's wearing his Kryptonian bathrobe. And he only wears it in one panel, I think.
Yeah, no, it's nice to see his fortress and all that sort of stuff. So I think there are some key highlights to this, though, that we really do need to talk about. First of all, we bring back Bizarro, which is always...
I was really surprised to see Bizarro in there, because given this is such an early story, chronologically speaking...
Yeah, but Bizarro's been around for so long.
He has been.
Miam
number one.
Sorry?
Miam
number one. Do opposite of all earthly things. no, I really like Bizarro, and it's always fun watching because Bizarro can, like, toe-to-toe with Superman, which is always nice to watch, because we've talked about this before, where Superman... either has to pull his punches or deal with a super alien or something like that.
The way they depict him in here is like as a dumb but very dangerous animal.
Exactly. But I think there's a couple other really key points to this book. One being Ra's al Ghul and the idea of the Lazarus Pit, and it brings a lot of that to light. But the thing that I thought was really, really interesting about this one in particular was Diana actually gets hurt at one point. During a conflict with Ra's al Ghul. And this is a bit further into the book, but she actually puts herself into the Lazarus pit. Mm. And I thought that was a really interesting maneuver because she wasn't even sure what would happen.
No.
But it was she was drawn to it. And what we find out in this book, and I don't know whether this is canon within the rest of the DC universe or not, but the Lazarus pit and the Amazons are kind of the same mystical origin, basically. As you said before, just one's light, one's dark. I think it's also fun to mention in this that she also brings back the invisible plane, which I always thought was
a
dorky idea in the first place.
They've played with that. There's a recent comic by a cartoon, one of those little interstitials they do on DC Nation by Lauren Faust, the person who did Powerpuff Girls and the My Little Pony stuff. She's in a series called Super Best Friends Forever. And it's where Batgirl and Supergirl want to steal the invisible plane with Wonder Girl,
right?
Because you know, Big Sister Diana won't miss it, and Batgirl just wants to take this thing to Mexico, you know? And they play around with the idea of what they look like going in and out of this invisible plane. Just the arms disappear and come out. You know, she's got the keys to this invisible plane thing. It's really, really cute. But yeah, no, completely dorky idea. Because most of the time that they showed this thing in the original comics, it's just Diana sitting.
She wasn't invisible. Just the plane was.
Would make you more obvious, surely.
Yeah, you think. Yeah, exactly. So at least in this one, when she goes inside it, she turns invisible as well with the plane and all sorts of... But it's kind of an idea that has gone out of Wonder Woman over recent years because she flies.
And in fact, in the most recent ones, they're completely rewriting her origin stories as well. And her home island of Themyscira, is not
Paradise Island.
Well, Paradise Island
for those who are from the old school.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Which now I believe is a reality show on Fox. Welcome to Paradise Island.
And it's got Snooki in it.
It's one guy and 13 Amazons. Who will survive?
Oh, man, that's a show I would watch.
And or would you wash?
Well, there's that too.
Yeah. Now, that idea's gone out, and they've kind of retconned her character as well and made her more about the Greek mythology, which this book actually touches on a lot. And that's something they've been doing with the Wonder Woman character a lot more in the last thing. They've really tied, pardon me, and I think they've done something with all three characters, which kind of comes out in this. With Wonder Woman, it's tying it even more to the Greek mythology. With Superman, really tying him to his Kryptonian roots as well. And also, thirdly, with Batman, really making the death of his parent such a focal point to his psyche.
And also, not just that, but with Batman, they're really focusing on he is tied to Gotham.
Gotham, yeah, absolutely.
And Gotham and him are like one, you know? And that's a really big thing in the New 52 is the fact that Gotham and him are one, and he knows everything about
particularly
Gotham.
Particularly the Scott Snyder run, the Court of Owls thing that's
exactly,
happening.
Exactly, that's what
which
I'm thinking.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is actually, out of the New 52, that is essential reading. So go out and have a look at that. So yeah, look, this is an interesting book. I don't think it's a perfect book in any way.
No.
And I think it actually has, it kind of whitewashes some stuff and kind of floats past other stuff, and you kind of go, I would love more detail on some of these relationships. But with all that being said, it's a really pretty book to look at. It's got a really nice art style, and it does get enough of it right that you sit there and go, yeah, this is kind of funky. Yeah. This is kind of, you sit there and go, and I love the relationship between the three of them. I love the fact that Batman doesn't quite know what to make of Wonder Woman.
No, and he doesn't trust Clark, but he, Superman... But he works with him well enough.
That's like, right. And then there is an immediate attraction between Wonder Woman and Superman. As I was saying to you before, she can see the yellow sun's glow off of his skin. Mm. And she's like, he just positively glows with energy, you know? And so her mystical... And it's funny because Superman has always had a weakness to magic.
Yeah.
And so there is that weird relationship that they would have because she is... completely founded in magic, and he is completely founded in being extraterrestrial.
Exactly.
And so you have...
And Batman is a human. He's got neither of those things.
Exactly. And, so, and he stands as basically wary of both of them. But it leads to an inevitable conclusion where they do all have to work together, and there is a bond formed between them.
Because while Wonder Woman doesn't approve of Batman's methods of interrogation, she recognizes that it got them there a lot faster than if, you know...
Well, that's right. She also starts to recognize that it's not her world.
Exactly. And, like, I mean, Batman gets very territorial about Gotham, particularly when the story goes there. There is a line, and I've just flicked to that page now, actually, where... Superman's actually saying he's in the Batcave, and he's referring to Batman. Says he always seems tense whenever I'm here. It's his private place, and it is, and it's more and more. I think they've created Batman over the years as a creepy man who sits in a cave in a costume,
very solitary.
If this person was in the real world, he would be a complete mental case. He would be a guy that sits. We're talking about someone who has walled himself off with a lot of high tech in a cave under a mansion with
and
a giant.
Watches everybody
with a giant dinosaur sitting behind him and a giant penny.
Yeah.
And with bats as well. He is a unique character. He's got the cool factor because we all kind of want to do that. Not so much the watching part. Unless, of course, Marsha is involved.
Or dressing up in her underwear.
Or dressing up in her underwear. The idea of being, the other, and I think this is what the Trinity has always represented, is the idea of, and here I'm about to get into that pretentious territory we're talking about off microphone.
Oh, please do.
But I think the idea of that all three of them represent aspects of what humans want to be. We've got Batman, who's the peak of human physical form, who's taken the law into his own hands. He is what everybody wants to do when they feel unjustly slighted. Mm-hmm. You know, his is an extreme example because his parents were murdered. But anybody who's ever suffered injustice wants to take a Batman response to it. You've got Wonder Woman, who kind of represents that kind of religious side people have. They want to look to the strong person who comes from this mythical origin. It's about the stories that we tell. It's kind of about that commonality that we all share. And she certainly has the Earth Mother vibe to her as well. So it's that kind of commonality of humans. Whereas Superman sits above them all, and on the cover of the first Trinity, he is quite literally on a podium in between the two of them, standing above. He is kind of, and one of my favorite scenes in Superman Returns, for all of its flaws, is Superman hovering above the planet, looking down on
and
it.
And listening. Yeah.
He hears all, sees all, can't shut it out. He can focus on bits, but he is literally the god that we look up to. When all those famous things, look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's look up. He is a god, as we've said so many times. And you said to me before the show,
he's the god.
No, we're
just saying he is a
godlike figure.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by that. And in terms of Diana and Wonder Woman, certainly her whole mythos that they've created is seeped in ancient religion and ancient mythology. So there is that aspect to
it as
well.
So you could look at it as the three tiers, getting into really wanky metaphors. You could look at the three tiers and say God, the worshippers, and the man.
Absolutely. And I think, and of course, when you say Trinity, you can't help but think of the rather Catholic thing of Trinity.
The Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. Yeah, exactly.
So there's that aspect to it as well. I mean, obviously Trinity is an easy thing here because there's three of them. But they are the cornerstones of the DC religion, as it were. They are the cornerstones. They're the three characters who have remained largely unchanged until 2011.
Yeah, we won't talk about the New 52 at this point. Let's just talk about the vast mythology that goes behind it. Before it.
They have remained, and even in their changes in the New 52, they have remained to their core.
Actually, that's true. Even in the New 52, Superman is still Superman. Wonder Woman is still Wonder Woman. And Batman is still Batman.
Yeah, right? Well, Batman hasn't changed at all.
No.
He has changed significantly over the years. And the Batman, and this is reflected, even though it's set in an earlier time, it is very much that logical follow-on from Frank Miller's Year One rather than, you know, the kooky stuff of the 60s.
Yeah, kooky stuff of the 60s is gone. I mean, let's face it. I think Batman was fundamentally changed in the 80s with not only Frank Miller, but also Alan Moore, our friend Alan Moore.
Of course, Killing Joke.
I think we saw Batman go through significant changes and turned into the darker character.
Well, the 80s for all of them, I mean.
And we also saw the death of Robin during that period. There was so much happened in the 80s in the world of comics that changed fundamentally comics from what they were. I mean, we've done 70s comics on this show. 70s comics were a different breed to what came in the 80s. The 80s legitimized comics and turned them into an adult media or medium. And we suddenly, and this is why, I mean, like last episode, we talked about Watchmen, you know what I mean? We required the 80s to do this for us, you know? And now comics today are what they are because of that period of time. I think if you look, I was a huge X-Men reader, and it's so funny because if you actually read the X-Men and you go just prior to the 80s, where basically the X-Men were recreated.
Yeah, before the Chris Claremont.
That's right. And then the X-Men, suddenly we had Wolverine introduced and Colossus, and you know, and the X-Men were changed fundamentally forever. Prior to that, I don't like the X-Men. The early X-Men I find really dorky. I was going back and rereading some of Stan Lee's original X-Men. Oh, they're almost unreadable. They are so bad.
Oh, I think they're marvelous.
I'm not even going to get it. Some of the quotes, the way they treat Marvel Girl, it's like, yay, come on, Dame.
Yeah. Go get the coffee.
Yeah, exactly. And you sit there and you're like, and the X-Men through the 70s and the dorky costumes and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And then suddenly in the 80s, the X-Men were reborn. And that's when I first really came on board with the X-Men. I went, this is awesome. And this is where we started to draw parallels to real life. This is when we started the mutant, the whole thing about mutants was actually kind of turned into this whole bigotry thing. And we started to really look at the world, and we started to do this with all the comic books. Spider-Man started to actually deal with real death when, like, what was her name? Jean Wolfe, I think it was, the police officer who he was friends with, got murdered in cold blood.
Well, of course. I mean, we did have Gwen Stacy long before that.
Sure, but Gwen Stacy was an impetus for him to do what he had to do. It's like Uncle Ben had to be killed as well.
Yeah.
I'm talking about just in his normal life, every time he would start to become happy about something, we would suddenly just slaughter someone. And when I talk about slaughter, the cover of the comic, I remember walking into the comic book store and buying it. It was actually a Web of Spider-Man issue, I think it was. And the cover was, the front page, the first page of the comic, was quite literally this cop who Spider-Man had become good friends, not romantically involved, just good friends with, was sprawled out on a bed and she'd been shotgunned. You know, and it's like, oh my God, what am I looking at here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that you wouldn't have seen that earlier on.
No, and look, I think this comic is interesting, Trinity, because it's got the look of it. It looks very, looks retro. Mm. It's got that kind of thing, and it looks like...
I can honestly say it's the only time I've ever thought Wonder Woman looks unattractive, but that's...
Yeah, it's funny because she looks a little boxy.
Yeah, she does.
But the buildings and things, kind of like certainly the building on the cover, it's kind
it's
of...
It's all very...
And the font is very Art Deco. It's kind of...
The buildings are all Art Deco design.
And they've got that kind of very retro look to them. So we're looking at... It looks like a 30s or 40s kind of feel to it. So you're looking at that golden age of comics. But at the same time, it's filtered through a very modern sensibility. And the page I'm looking at the moment has Wonder Woman in chains. Mind you...
But we're not talking about just chains.
Chains. We're talking about... She's got a huge... These are the same chains that were used to hold down Bizarro.
Or King Kong,
yeah. If you looked down, I've mentioned this site a few times, superdickery.com. If you go there, there's a whole section there dedicated to various scenes where Wonder Woman was in some set of what seemed to be S&M or bondage.
Right.
And there seems to be references to this all throughout, like, the 40s, 50s and 60s of Wonder Woman comics. Like, they really played up that aspect.
That whole Betty Page thing.
Yeah, and yeah. That was for the longest time there. I mean, we are basically talking about someone who gets around in a bra and star-spangled underpants.
Mm,
She was given pants, but...
they took them away from her.
They took them away. So,
she hadn't earned her long pants, apparently.
No. Come back when you're more of a woman, apparently. I don't know. Look, I mean, there's a lot to be said about the portrayal of Wonder Woman over the years. This, is, as we said, is one of the first times where she is very much portrayed as an outsider to the world of humans, and also... being treated with, a woman, as you said, a woman who is incredibly attracted to the Superman as well, which we don't explicitly get in other books, and I think it's a really important subject to explore because they work together.
I think that's how these relationships start. When you've got that much power, and let's face it, Wonder Woman is incredibly strong. She's an incredibly powerful character. I mean, she can stop trains and stuff. I mean, this woman is very strong.
As they say, with great power comes great sex.
I wasn't going to say that, but now that you've said it, I can't get the image out of my head. But I was about to say, so there is going to be a natural attraction between two such powerful people, you know? And it's something that I've always thought that needed to be explored more. And they've never, and it's only in these like offshoot books where, like in When Kingdom Come, where we finally have, you know, them get together and you go, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, why aren't we seeing more of that, you know? Anyway, but I like this book a lot. Mm. It's not great, it's not perfect, but it was a very enjoyable read. I like the fact that we've actually got Bizarro and Ra's al Ghul And there's another one as well. There's a woman in it as well who's basically working for Ra's al Ghul.
It's kind of like a Wonder Girl-esque character, but she's Armitus. She's Armitus is the name of the character. Who there's an Armitus that's in Young Justice at the moment, and I don't know if it's going to be the same character, but she's basically Green Arrowette. So whether or not she's going to be revealed to be an
this
Amazon.
This one's actually
an
Amazon, though, isn't
she? She's an Amazon. So whether or not Young Justice will reveal her to be an Amazon
or not,
because there is a hint in the Young Justice thing, and I'm only halfway through the first season, that Armitus in that series is actually working for somebody else.
I actually really want to see Young Justice. Yeah. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. So
I'm only up to a point where she's just been introduced. So it's.
I definitely have to catch up with the series. I believe the series is very good, and I really want to have a look at it. So we've got this combination of bad guys.
Yes.
And having their various side stories and so forth, having to take on all of this, and it's just a really interesting combination of threats that are forcing these three characters who probably shouldn't be working together, but are, and they have to be pulled together to solve this overarching mystery, a mystery as to who is pulling the strings behind. And of course, Batman figures this stuff out because Batman is who Batman is, you know? And we start to see each of their strengths. We have the raw power of Superman. We have Batman working out the clues, and we have the knowledge of the various mystical elements, which is what Wonder Woman brings to the table. So, and you can understand why they would have to work together. So I liked it. I thought it was an okay read. Is it essential reading, Richard? I don't think so.
Sorry, Artemis, not Armitus.
I don't think it's essential.
No, it's it's a solid story. It covers it's kind of similar to, without being quite as good, that DC New Frontier, Justice League New Frontier book. And it's kind of got that sort of golden age lens to it, but without being as essential. It's without being as uplifting, and it doesn't sort of worship the era quite as much. It wants to play with these three characters, but it also does a thoroughly modern story within it. So it's kind of difficult to reconcile those elements at times. And as you said,
yeah, it's a little bit confused.
I mean, look, you know, I've always said it with films when they try to introduce more than one or two villains, and Spider-Man 3 is a great example of this. You just start losing the central plot. The best stories are always Batman versus the Joker, Lex Luthor versus Superman, you know.
Well, you didn't like Batman and Robin? Nobody liked Batman and Robin.
A film that did give us...
A freeze is coming.
There you go.
Yeah,
that mute button will kill you every time, won't it?
But, it's confused on that level because it is sort of a modern story with this old sensibility, but it still kind of gets the balance right. So I'd recommend it because it is still a good read, but I don't think it's essential reading.
No. Very good point. Okay, so next week next week is kind of a fun one. Next week we're actually doing the lighter side of the Punisher.
Yes, well, like, the Punisher is known for his evisceration and shooting of people.
And we still have that.
In we're doing two books next week because we always like to make it difficult for ourselves.
They're two small books.
Two very small books. We're doing a book called Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe by Garth Ennis.
Which we've actually talked about since issue one.
It was a book that I recommended to David ages ago, and it kind of led to this, which will be issue 25.
And in sourcing a copy of that for myself, I ran across another book called Archie Meets... No, what is it? The Punisher Meets Archie. No, Archie Meets the Punisher.
It's Archie Meets the Punisher.
Archie Meets the Punisher. And I thought, pardon?
Maybe it is Archie Meets the Punisher.
Meets the Punisher. And so when we were putting together next week's show, we thought we should put these two together because these are two, for lack of a better word, batshit crazy books.
As Archie says, I knew there'd be a chaperone, but this is ridiculous. The team up you thought would never happen. Archie and the Punisher wish you were right.
No, more important is the team up that should never have happened.
No.
That doesn't say that the book is awful. Mm. It's just saying it's a team up that shouldn't have happened. So we'll talk about that more next week. So we're going to talk about the lighter side of the Punisher with these two books.
And that'll be our silver anniversary episode, David.
Oh, really?
25 episodes.
25 episodes in, and you won't even be in the country.
No, I won't be. Technically speaking, I'm not right now.
Well, that's true. Mm. When you actually hear this, you will be where?
Let me see. 15th of April, I'll still be in Paris.
I should have put at this point cue in some Paris music underneath us, shouldn't I? Yeah. I could put in Paris in the springtime.
Oh, so, absolutely.
Yeah, I could do something like
and
that.
I can pretend to be Owen Wilson in Midnight in Paris.
Or you could not.
Or I could not.
Well, I don't know about you, but I need to go off and wash Marcia. So, so we're going to wrap this up. And I'm going to say, Richard, where can people find more about you on the internet?
They can find me at therealbits.com. That's the RELbits.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
Fantastic. And you can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh, all one word. And if you want to write to us, we should always mention, we keep forgetting this little piece of information. If you want to write to us, and we do have some feedback on our Facebook page, which we're going to talk about right now. And our Facebook page is where?
Is at facebook.com/behindthepanels.
And if you want to write to us, you can write to us at comics@geekactually.com is the feedback line directly. And also, if you are in the mood and you are an iTunes subscriber, please drop us some feedback on iTunes. That would actually be great to get the show further up the ranks.
Absolutely.
On our Facebook page, Richard.
Well, we mentioned this a few episodes ago that Andrew John Todd had left a few comments on our page. And so thank you so much for keeping up with that. And there's a few people there who've been active on our Facebook page. I see Michelle Budge has liked a few things on there as well. So I want to thank everyone who's been doing that and keeping up with the Facebook as well. But some of the comments that Andrew's left here, we thought we'd respond to some of them. We've already spoken about the comic shop in Melbourne called Comics R Us. Andrew wants to know if we're going to go to Oz Comic Con, and that's the plan is that we are. We've got accreditation, so hopefully we'll be heading down there soon. And David,
we just need to raise the money to do this. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to put a special donations bucket, basically, up on geekactually.com. We're going to set a target, and anything you can throw in there, $1 here, $1 there, $5 here, $100 there, no, whatever. Whatever you can spare, basically, will all go towards hotels, plane fares, cars,
hookers blow,
lots of stuff, to get us to Comic-Con so that we can get coverage. And this will be for all of our shows, of course, because Comic-Con is both movies and comic and everything, so we can put stuff up on everything. So we're going to have a lot of material out of Comic-Con, so it'd be really helpful if you guys could throw something our way, which would just help us out. And I always hate asking for money because it's like begging, but we're not begging. We're just saying if you want to help us out.
No, but we can beg if we have to.
And I can beg and plead with the best of them.
Now, Andrew's other most recent comment, which he posted yesterday at the time that we're recording these, but it'll probably be several weeks ago by the time you hear it. He said, I just picked up Justice League 1-7 from your recommendation. So now I'm collecting Justice League, Red Lanterns, and AVX, which is Avengers versus X-Men, I believe. I'm starting to build up a good stack of comics, which what is a good way I can store my comics, but also keep them close so I can read. Andrew, we're glad you asked. We recommend to keep them in a plastic bag at all times.
Bagged and boarded.
Bagged and boarded in a bindle on a stick.
Don't say bindle.
But I like bindles. I got my bindle with
me. No, look, you get yourself a good long box. You bag them up. You can actually buy the bags at comic book stores.
Yeah, like any comic book store. The two comic book stores that you go to, I'd certainly recommend them. I get, I can't even remember the brand, but most of them carry the same things. You get your current size bags and boards, because the Silver Age ones are a little bit of a different size.
Yep.
And
it's important things like the board has got to be acid free,
absolutely.
Yes, because this is long-term storage, so you want to make sure that they're kept nice and flat, good condition. And look, quite honestly, if you are an avid collector and you actually are bagging and boarding your comics, what you could do is after you bought your comics, you read them, you put bag and board them, and then buy a digital copy for future reading.
digital copy or a trade paperback, whatever you prefer. I mean, yeah. I used to do that a lot. I used to buy the, particularly for the things like Green Arrow, which I know I reread a lot. I'd have all my individual issues and get the trade paperback when it was available. So I could reread those stories without getting...
If you don't want to own multiples and you actually want to read your comics, you're not collecting for like purpose of money, then yeah, you just want to have good quality bags and boards so that they're kept in good condition and you can just drag them out when...
Absolutely.
And look, make sure your hands are actually oil-free. Mm, you know, don't eat fish and chips and then go grabbing your comics.
You might want to wear white cotton gloves if you're really serious. I've never done that.
No.
But yeah, look, digital comics are great. I think I read a lot of my comics digitally now. Mm. And I think that that's Marvel and DC and certainly some of the other publishers have made that.
There's something nice about print. We were actually in King's not long ago and we were looking through all these issues and they're beautifully printed and they're on glossy paper now and all sorts of stuff. And you sit there and you look at them and go... There is something really nice about that printed comic, but for convenience, I read everything on the iPad.
It is so much easier, and I think, you know, look, that's probably where the thing's going, but you know what? As David said, nothing's going to replace print for me as a collector.
No.
But as a reader, if that's what you're interested in doing...
And let's just say, for the record, if you collect your comics through Comixology, that's fantastic for reading purposes, but they are not going to be worth anything.
No.
That is not collecting.
That's not collecting, but it is... a lot of people now might just want to read them, which I think is look, let's face it, we don't all, you know, if you're living in an apartment or you've got a small place, you don't have room to bag and board and box a whole lot of things. I've certainly run out of room. But look, you know, and I think there's different ways of doing it. But look, you know, it depends on what you want to do. If you don't want to collect them every month, just wait for the trades, wait for the digital collections, whatever.
And then they'll sit in bookshops. They'll sit in bookshelves really nicely.
Multiple printings. I mean, this book that we spoke about this week is available as a collection.
In fact, looking down the list, we say Watchmen is a trade paperback. You can get that. Trinity is, forget the Punisher. Nick Fury is definitely going to be at some stage, I'm sure. And Green Arrow is. So
I dare say
over the next few weeks, all the books we talk about are all going to be available.
And I dare say all the ones that we have spoken about in the past have been available in collections with a possible exception of some of the New 52 stuff that we've spoken about.
Although New 52, all the issue ones are one big book.
Yeah. I still have to get that because I want that
book. I really want. I covet that book.
I don't know if I can handle the shipping costs.
No.
David, that looks like another show.
That does look like a show. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm. It looks like a show.
And a whole lot of washing in the middle.
Yeah, a lot of washing in the middle. Oh, got to apologize for losing it at the beginning. That was very funny. You took me off guard with that one, man.
And it'd been a little while since I'd listened to it.
You took me completely off guard with that one. I loved it. All right, guys, we'll see you all again next week. Next week is Punisher, the lighter side of Punisher. And remember, Richard will be back for proper full-length shows on, I think it's the 13th of May. Is
that's
that correct?
Correct.
Yep, excellent. And we'll see him then. That's another show. See you next week.
See you for the 25th anniversary next week.
Bye, all.
Welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 24, the only comic book podcast that I completely forgot the intro
Let's start again. Stop and clear, and here we go again.
Damn it, I didn't have it written in front of me, so I lost it.
Remember,
line.
All right, line. All right, so this one. Watch her do what?
Well, if it was me, I'd go watch Marshall wash.